the Public News Service Daily Newscast for the 13th of October, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. Senate confirmation hearings for Amy Coney Barrett, President Trump's latest nominee for the Supreme Court, kicked off Monday. Our Suzanne Potter reports so far the hearings have been dominated by concerns she would vote to dismantle the Affordable Care Act.
If the Medicare expansion dies with the ACA, an estimated 200,000 people in Connecticut would lose health insurance. Brad Woodhouse with the nonprofit advocacy group Protect Our Care says that number rises to 20 million nationwide.
Right now, Republicans in Washington are trying to ram through a nominee to the Supreme Court who will do what they have tried to do for years legislatively, overturn the Affordable Care Act and end protections for people with pre-existing conditions.
The High Court will consider a challenge to the ACA 1 week after the election. President Trump says he will protect people with pre-existing conditions, but has yet to release a long-promised replacement for the ACA.
CNN reports a technical glitch at a voting supersite, hours-long lines, and a last-minute court ruling marked the start of in-person early voting in Georgia. That state a presidential battleground for the first time in decades. That will also play a huge role in deciding which party controls the Senate. CNN notes that the Democratic nominee, Joe Biden, hopes to peel the peach state away from Trump, who won by 5 percentage points in 2016. There are also not one but two Senate races on the ballot in Georgia, with two incumbent Republicans trying to fend off challengers. And with hundreds of thousands still out of work in Virginia during the pandemic, the state is boosting funding for an innovative program that connects job seekers with employment networks through neighborhood contacts.
Piedmont Virginia Community College is receiving more than $1.5 million to expand its network-to-work model, which has provided jobs with livable wages for hundreds of unemployed folks. Rich Schuyler heads up the program and says it uses a unique word-of-mouth approach where local contacts inform friends and community groups about job openings through smartphones. He says it has brought those left behind back into the workforce, particularly Black single mothers.
We say, hey, there's this great job opportunity maybe three blocks away that you don't even know about. Are you interested in pursuing that opportunity? And that single mom who's been head down just trying to figure out how to make ends meet can lift her head up and think, I didn't even know that existed. I didn't know how to get to it, but now I do.
Since Network to Work began in 2014, 85% of participants have found jobs, and almost 60% of those jobs pay more than $25,000 a year. More than half of the job seekers are African American, and 40% are single mothers. I'm Diane Bernard.
This is PNS. Now an update on children's health and a report that's been making some waves. Mary Sherman has perspective from the Pelican State.
Even during a time when the economy was notably strong, Louisiana lost ground in ensuring that children have access to health coverage. According to a new Georgetown University Center for Children and Families report, 50,000 kids in Louisiana were uninsured in 2019, a historic 28% increase from 3 years earlier. Stacey Roussel with the Louisiana Budget Project says the state's rate of uninsured children was 4.4% in 2019, a full percentage point increase from 2016.
It's important to remember that these are pre-pandemic numbers. And so going into a public health emergency in 2020, we had more children uninsured in the nation and in Louisiana than we've had certainly in the past several years.
Roussel says the findings are concerning considering that Louisiana has long been a national leader in covering children.
Some farmers are in fear that a rate case before the Idaho Commission will throw shade on future solar projects, our Eric Teganoff explains.
The State Public Utilities Commission will consider changes for farmers to its net metering program, which credits producers for excess energy sent back to the grid. The proposal could mean a lower net metering credit rate. Russell Schirmeyer is a farmer in Bruno, located in the high desert of southwest Idaho. He has high energy costs and installed solar 2 years ago. Under Idaho Power's proposed change, he would be grandfathered in under the current rates, but only for 10 years rather than 25 like residential customers.
It seems to make a lot of sense to kind of keep everybody on the same playing field because a solar panel on my house is not much different than a solar panel on my field, and I don't see how the payback period takes less than half the time if it's not on my house.
The proposal also includes removing a dual meter requirement for farmers, which would lower costs for solar.
And finally, Andrea Sears tells us New York is a step closer now to bringing the first offshore wind power to thousands of homes on Long Island.
The New York Department of Public Service and four other state agencies have signed a joint proposal on the siting of the transmission line that will connect an offshore wind farm to the Long Island Power Authority grid. The project is relatively small, bringing only 130 megawatts of power ashore. But according to Joe Martins, director of the New York Offshore Wind Alliance, the joint proposal is a significant milestone in reaching the state's goal of generating 9,000 megawatts of offshore wind power by 2035.
This is important because it's really symbolic that the process is attainable, that the goal can be achieved, and the construction can actually start.
Just last month, Governor Andrew Cuomo proposed new regulations to speed up the siting and construction of major renewable energy projects. This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported, heard on some of America's most interesting radio stations, and online at publicnewsservice.org.